I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's been a busy few weeks for the Philadelphia School District. The School Reform Commission agreed to an expansion of charter schools, a vote that led to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf removing SRC head Bill Green. Wolf included in his budget proposal an increase of $159 million for the district, part of his plan to increase funding for education across the state. Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter called for increasing property taxes in the city, with about $100 million going to the district. And finally, District Superintendent William Height released his Action Plan 3.0. It's a bold blueprint for reorganizing and redesigning the district so that all children can achieve, have excellent teachers, go to safe schools, that work in partnership with parents. We invited William Height to join us once again on Radio Times, and nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. Every time we've had you on the show, we've been talking about school closures, laying off teachers, trying to figure out what to do with less money. Is the district rounding a corner when it comes to the crisis of education here in the city?
Well, I like to think so, Marty. And as you indicated, for the first several years that you and I have had this conversation, it's been all about stabilizing our fiscal picture and making sure that we were not spending beyond the revenues we would receive. This action plan actually begins to look forward, and it looks into the future of the district. And it has to be a district that has a system that is equitably applied to all students regardless of circumstances and regardless of where they live in the city. So this is about if you think about Action Plan version 1.0, stabilization and what that meant, school closures, the reduction of staff, the elimination of programs and resources. Action Plan version 2.0 really defined the work that we were attempting to do around early literacy, college and career readiness, talent, fiscal and budget. And then this action plan is really about how we organize ourselves to ensure that those scarce resources are used most efficiently and effectively with the children who have unfortunately historically been underrepresented.
But it does require more money. I think that the number that I saw, almost $1 billion over the next 5 years in order to, I think, implement the plan the way that you want.
It's no question about it. And I want to respond to this in two ways. Number one, the monies that we've had to reduce, or the revenue that has been reduced in the School District of Philadelphia over the past several years, it's been significant. We felt that. Many of our stakeholders have felt that, in particular our teachers, our family members, and unfortunately our students. The second piece of this is really talking about the investments that are necessary in order to change, fundamentally change what's existing and what's happening in classrooms. That, in many cases, even with more resources, mm-hmm. weren't serving the needs of all children. And so we have to think about our work differently. And understanding and acknowledging this is not all just about money, but it does take money in order to educate children, particularly those who are coming from circumstances of poverty or learning English or may have a special need.
And I do want to talk about your plans for changing schools and even changing what happens inside the classroom. But just to spend a little time on money, Wolf's budget does include $159 million for the district, as I said, also money for other districts as well. But it does require the legislature to pass some taxes, severance tax on natural gas. Nutter's proposal does require increasing property taxes in the city. None of that is a done deal. Can you sort of live with the uncertainty of that for the next couple months?
Well, we're living with the uncertainty. And I do want to – the glimmer of hope here is that it's been proposed. And that is a far sight better than where we've been in the past several years. And so both the governor – and the mayor in their respective budgets have both proposed investments for the purpose of education, which, number one, in my opinion, is an acknowledgement that it takes more revenue in order to do these things. And number two, also acknowledging that these revenues have been cut over a period of time. And I will also add that both the mayor, with support from city council, provided significant revenue during a time when there were decreases at the state level for the school district of Philadelphia. However, it is also an acknowledgement that cost increase, if in fact we did nothing or added nothing, our costs would increase a certain percentage every year. And so these investments will take additional recurring sources of revenue to get us out of the significant structural problems that we've had in the district over the past 5 years.
So looking ahead to a stable source of funding, I think all districts are looking for that rather than having to figure out maybe year to year, maybe even month to month, how much money is coming in, how much money is going out. You're looking for stable long-term sources of money?
Absolutely. I mean, we have to be able to plan. We have to be able to plan long-term. And school districts cannot just create plans in July for the upcoming school year. These things take time, and they take time to implement. They take resources. And understanding what those things are over the next few years is far more important than understanding if, in fact, we're going to wrangle or collect enough money just to open the doors. And that's a very different conversation, because this conversation allows us to talk about those things like instructional practices or professional development or instructional materials or resources that support the needs of students, like counseling services or health services. And I think all of those things require a level of investment that we haven't been able to make over the past several years.
What I almost hate to ask this question this way, but looking at your action plan 3.0, and I do want to spend some time on it, what is the sort of bumper sticker description of what Action Plan 3.0 is?
Yeah, I mean, this. If there was a bumper sticker, it would be, this is all about equity. And we want an equitable system of schools that serves every single child in a way that provides them with access and opportunity. And we cannot have certain children who have access to that simply because they were fortunate enough to be enrolled in a special admit school, or they hit the lottery and got into a very good charter school. But then we have the vast majority of our children are sitting in neighborhood schools. Mm. And we have to turn our attention now to neighborhood schools to really think about and to focus on what those schools need in order to be successful. So I would say equity is the leading piece when we think about this, because when you have limited resources, you have to, we as a district have to ensure that those resources are distributed in an equitable way so that we're having the opportunity to serve the needs of all children. And so we're reorganizing ourselves to specialize our work. And we want to provide those services to schools that need and in many cases require different things. And so I'll use a couple of examples. A school that is serving children who are over age and undercredited. These children want to finish high school, get to a job. They may have dropped out before. Those children need something very different than a special admit school.
Sure.
So, and the leadership at those schools needs something very different. So we want to specialize our attention to provide for the resources and supports that those schools need, and understanding that they're differentiated from the perspective of a district.
And the word you seem to use is network. I mean, the idea of sort of creating various networks within the city. Looking at neighborhood schools, it looks like you're interested in obviously improving the education there, but maybe it's a district school, maybe it's a charter school. Sounds like you're open to more charter expansion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we've talked about is selective and purposeful charter expansion, and that means a couple of different things. It means not just increasing the number of seats for the sake of increasing seats, however, but providing for that more equitable approach. So, in other words, we have areas of the city now where, unfortunately, there are not high-quality options for schools that are available. And it's no surprise that not many of the 39 applications we had for new charters were for those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is, if they're high-quality providers and providers who have proven that they could work with certain groups of children, then match those with areas of the city where we need something very different for our young people. And so that's the expansion. That's the strategic expansion we're talking about. And at the same time, just as we're focusing on low-performing district schools, we must also focus on low-performing charter schools so that we are also removing those seats and perhaps replacing those with higher-performing ones if, in fact, we have to expand.
But do you think district schools can compete with charter schools when it comes to these neighborhood schools? If you're saying we're looking for quality schools with a track record, you have those also among district schools, don't you?
Oh, no question about it. And we do have those among district schools. And so part of the networks that we were talking about, there is another network that speaks to something that we want to develop, and we want to develop a network of schools that have complete autonomy. In other words, we want to treat them very much like charters. Just give them a per-pupil amount. They understand, and we will hold them accountable for student results, but they understand what they will have to do in terms of meeting state requirements and federal requirements, but those schools will be fully autonomous. And those are – it's a recognition that we have great schools in neighborhoods that are serving children, but unfortunately, they're not in every neighborhood.
And the question always is with something – with education is, if there are models that work, why can't they be recreated – all over the city?
Marty, I say, so the what I when I generally talk about this, I talk about being the superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia with the responsibility for 203,000 young people who are being educated in public schools. That's not talking about district schools versus charter schools. That's not charter schools versus district and who's better or who's not. It is really a system of schools that is designed to equitably serve all children. And I think if all things are equal, we should be agnostic about who is the who the provider is, but instead the service that individuals are delivering, the educational outcomes that these individuals are producing, and that should be irrespective of sector. And so I think that one thing that's really important is to understand that if, in fact, we get the funding thing right and the formula that follows children so that it's a fair playing field, then we're looking for high-quality options and high-quality providers. And as I indicated with this new with our new action plan version 3.0, we want to be best in class. And where we are not best in class as a district – and there are other individuals who are doing that better, then we should work with those individuals to deliver that service for us.
I want to pick up on that because in many ways it's been framed for so long in this city. It's district schools versus charter schools. So I want to pick up on that. Excuse me. But first, a very short break talking with school superintendent, Philadelphia School Superintendent William Height. He's been a guest on Radio Times a number of times over the years because of so many things that have been happening here in the city of Philadelphia and also involving the many children that attend schools here in the city. He has just released his Action Plan 3.0. We've been talking about that. Also talking about the fact that looks like there's the possibility of some more money coming into the city. And we want to hear from you at radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Dr. William Height. He is the superintendent of the Philadelphia school system here, a job he has had for 3 years, I would say three very difficult years involving deep funding cuts and staff layoffs and building closures. He believes there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and we are talking about some of his ideas for the schools in Philadelphia. And again, to join the conversation, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at @WHYY Radio Times. Charters have really been seen, I think, in many ways as a threat to public schools here, in part because of the money that follows the children if they go to a charter, the money that follows them out the door to the charter. What happens if you, let's say, a teacher with 25 children, five of them go to charters, you still need to pay the teacher, you still need to keep the lights on. How do you address the funding formula so that you can focus on this quality issue that you want to do?
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, Marty, and the right question. And because if in fact we can find a resolution to that question, then we can change the conversation from who's the better sector to, I mean, what is quality and how do we have qualitative options for families. But I said earlier, I mean, it is. I was asked this even when I was interviewing here. You know, what are your thoughts on charters? And I said, look, I'm agnostic about the approach or the model as long as it's serving children and serving them in a very supportive and responsive way, and producing the types of outcomes. But when an expansion of one sector takes away from the other sector, then that is not a fair playing field or equal playing field. And then we are not just impacting the schools that are sending the five children to a charter, so to speak, but we're impacting children sitting in all of our other schools as well. So it is –
So how do you fix that?
So it's one pot of money now, and that pot actually – they're fixed expenses, and the charter schools are funded based on what districts spend and the previous year. And so if, in fact, we get the additional money – and here's an example of how this works in the current structure. So if we get $260 million, let's say that the governor and the mayor's budgets are somehow adopted and we get to spend that amount of money next fiscal year, the following year we will need $400 million. Because we will be paying charters more per student based on that additional $260 million. Now, you fix that with a per pupil funding formula where every child equals an amount of money, and regardless of where those children go, those monies follow. But when you have a pot of money and one segment is fixed based on what you spend, even on that segment, then it does create a situation where for every dollar you spend, you have to add 40 additional cents if a child is leaving to go to a different sector.
We had, recently on the show, the head of the Philadelphia School Partnership. And as you know, he has, I don't know if the offer still stands, but something like $25 million, some of this money tied to the expansion of charters. But from his calculations, there would be $2,000 that would follow, that would be, I guess, used to help children pay for children going into charters. The district says, no, it's really $7,000. Is that the discrepancy here, like a $5,000 discrepancy? I don't want to get too lost in the numbers here, and I do want to go back to some of the more philosophical issues.
But no, there are a lot of numbers. I mean, people see our budget as almost a $3 billion budget, and then they divide the number of children that we serve in district schools. But out of those monies, we have debt service, we have the cost of charters, and those are fixed amounts. And so even when we have revenue reductions, we cannot cut those things. And so that means that the cuts then must come from all of the children or all of the schools that remain under the district's oversight. And that's why those stranded costs are what they are. And so I think that's why I talked about recurring revenue. And we are delighted that that PSP made such a generous offer, and we're going to talk about how they could support components of the plan. But without some recurring revenue source, we're creating a problem 3 years from now they will not have enough revenue to address, nor will we. And so with the current funding structure, it creates a problem for us without recurring sources of revenue simply because those costs increase if, in fact, we did or added nothing.
I was reading this something about half of the children attending, district schools in Philadelphia don't meet the state standards for math and reading. Is that about right?
That's about right. That's right.
What does that tell us?
Yeah. I mean, that tells us that, I mean, over the past several years, I mean, and I will add, Monty, that's only slightly higher in the charter sector. So here we go back to comparing sectors again. But, I mean, it's only slightly higher. I mean, and so it means that fundamentally we all have to do a much better job of providing for children. And we have to really begin thinking about some of the core services. And when I talk about core services, I'm talking about teaching and learning, what school environments look and feel like in order to be supportive for students, and then how do we think about getting the best people in front of children and rewarding those individuals and ensuring that they remain in and in front of our children. And so those are some of the core services that then become critically important. And I think that as a school district, we have to focus a lot more time and attention on those things than we have in the past.
Is it difficult, though, to hire teachers in the district knowing the difficulties of the last couple of years, the numbers of people that have been laid off, the fact that schools don't have, you know, have enough nurses or counselors? If you're competing with, let's say, a suburban district, that's got to be a tough sell.
That is a tough sell. I mean, and what we found is that many individuals, it is. I mean, they read the papers just like we do. And that's one reason we're talking about, we're having an investment conversation now, because it has become increasingly difficult. And the other thing that makes it difficult is that even when in the past, when some of our principals have recruited some very good individuals, those individuals, no fault of their own or of their principals, then have been replaced. Simply because they were not the most senior individuals. And so they were replaced and they were sent somewhere else. And when they left, they also took with them the expertise for the club that they were sponsoring or the PD that they led or some grant that they also obtained. And so equally important to fixing our revenue and our brand is also fixing or addressing the work rules that that then prioritize certain individuals over other individuals. And the problem is the process we're using to prioritize is not around quality. It's around years of service. And so that does become a challenge for us as well.
Well, we know the School Reform Commission essentially canceled the contract with the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. I mean, in part over things like work rules. You want to change the work rules?
Yeah, I mean, at least one. I mean, and
this one having to do with seniority.
Absolutely. And I want to be clear, this is not about the elimination of seniority. I mean, but it is about if, in fact, there are exceptions to seniority that are important to schools, then we should address that so that schools have the ability to hire and maintain the individuals who have made a qualitative difference in their school. And I think that that's extremely important. And so this is – but the cancellation of the contract, back to your point, was dealing primarily with our benefit costs. And our benefit costs is another area where we've seen benefits our benefit costs 37% of our budget, 37%. And since 2008, we've seen increases in benefit costs at 32% that the district now pays. I would love to think about that 32% increase in benefit costs in the form of other compensation measures that then we could use to actually provide teachers with additional revenue or resources or salaries for that matter. And that's the problem that we're faced with. And so that was the cancellation of the contract. And that was done solely to get very needed and critical resources back into classrooms.
I know you've heard this before, and certainly I've heard from teachers on this show that say, we work hard. We buy supplies for our students. We're in the classroom trying to teach students under these really difficult conditions that, in part, we did not create. And I guess when you see a contract like this, they feel like, and now you're going to take this away from us too.
Yeah, yeah, no. And that was one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do. But part of it was simply because it could not allow our children to go through another year like last year. And quite frankly, many of the individuals who are standing in front of children to go through another year like they had last year without critically important supplies. And, oh, by the way, Marty, they still don't have all that they need in order to provide for their young people. But it is our work, and we've made some progress, and we've made some progress around early literacy. We have schools that, on a whole, are safer, and students feel better about attending schools. That is not in spite of what teachers are doing. It's because of what they're doing in classrooms each and every day. And they have, quite frankly, taken us through this tough and very difficult time. But it was a recognition, though, that we need instructional materials. We need resources in classrooms that are available for students. And we were asking for a contribution of benefits so that we could reinvest those things into classrooms and into schools.
And that's William Hyde, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, Philadelphia School District Superintendent. We are talking about his blueprint for reorganizing and redesigning the district, talking about some of the financial challenges facing the district. And I should add that there are 134,000 children in the city attending district schools, 63,000 attending charter schools, and 3,600 attending alternative schools, just so people know a bit of what we're talking about. Let me get we have a tweet from Max. He says 3.0 requires recruiting and cultivating talented administrators, principals, teachers, and staff. How can the superintendent do this?
Yeah, I mean, we've already begun, and we have now new processes in place. This was the part of Action Plan version 2.0. We have new processes now to both attract and recruit and retain very good principals, very good teachers. And in fact, I think I shared on your show before, many of our new principals this year were in the classroom a year ago. And we've had systems in place prior to last year that would have overlooked those individuals. And so one thing we're doing is actively recruiting on a regular basis those individuals. We put out a release earlier in the year that we're going to be in the market for 400 new teaching positions.
400.
400, and which signals that it is starting to be a shift in how we're thinking about this. This is the first time we've been in a posture of hiring that many teachers in the last 3 years. And so it is all intentional about being very focused and strategic on the types of individuals that we want to lead our schools. And what we're finding is, even with all of the challenges that we've had, individuals are excited about the work that we're trying to perform, work that then allows for innovation, allows for bottom-up ideas, although we can do much better there. But individuals are excited about that, and so we're getting calls of individuals who are interested both in teaching in the district and interested in leading schools.
Max, thanks for the tweet. We have an email from Sivan, says, how has the vitriolic charter district debate affected your job of improving education in Philadelphia?
We touched on this earlier. That's a great question. And I think that, once again, we have to make that less of a debate. And that debate actually has to be around quality. And it
is. How do you dial that back, though? Because, it's pretty intense.
Oh, pretty intense. I mean, and it's intense because it has advantaged one sector while disadvantaging the other. So, number one, we dial it back with a funding system that's fair and equitable, where monies follow children in a true fashion. So that's number one. The second one is that we have a new accountability framework now. It's called the SPR. And the SPR does a couple of things. It looks at growth. It also looks at satisfaction in schools, both from parents and from students. It looks at climate. It looks at college-going culture and college readiness and attendance. And unlike other state systems, it compares schools that have similar demographics. And so one way to do that is to get every public school in Philadelphia on that system. And so that schools will be on that system so that there's one place that we go and that will provide us with all of the information about our schools and what they're accomplishing.
You want charters on them as well, so you can compare and contrast.
No question about it.
We have an email from Nick, says, how much per child is spent at charter schools and how much per child at public schools? Do you know the answer to that?
I do know the answer. I think that on average, we it's a little hard to calculate, but on average it's 10,500.
10,005?
10,005 for charter schools. It's about 12,005 for district schools. If, in fact, you look at the you just look at it based on the numbers of students. The problem comes in when I talked about those fixed costs, right. And that those it's based on what we spend. So what we spend on out-of-district placements or what we spend on AP courses or what we spend for children with special needs then dictates that number for charter. So it's much harder to do a per pupil around what that is in the sectors because there are a couple of structures in place that do not allow us to do a true per pupil calculation. And we also now have a group that is doing that analysis for us so that it looks at the cost drivers for district schools and for charter schools. And we'll have this number for that caller. That is a great question.
Philadelphia has a high rate of poverty. Yes. The numbers of children that are poor in the city that are going to the schools is, you know, well above 50%. How does that factor into just what it means to teach in the city and what it means to be a student in this city?
It's a significant factor. And when we look at like districts, Marty, we are one of the poorest, if not the poorest. That number is 86%.
86% of students?
86% of our students are coming from circumstances of poverty that are educated in district schools. And that does have a tremendous impact. If you think about all of the things that are associated with poverty, like trauma that children are faced with. And so we have – there's a need to have trauma-informed training. There is a need to – provide other services like behavior health or DHS types of services Department of Human Services for our young people. We have schools. We have 26 schools with social workers in the school community, and so they're all of the health related, the nutritional things, and so. All of these things become more significant factors. And I will add to the individual's question is that we know that poverty is an indicator for student success. We also know that it costs more to educate children who are coming from circumstances of poverty, and it costs even more when there are high concentrations of students coming from circumstances of poverty. So that's why that's so important.
Let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Dr. William Height, the superintendent of the Philadelphia School District, joining us in this hour of Radio Times, talking about his plans for educating children in this city. Stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with William Height. He is the Philadelphia School Superintendent. He's a job he's had for the last 3 years, three difficult years, I should add, involving deep funding cuts and staff layoffs and building closures. He believes there could be a light at the end of the tunnel. The new governor wants to give the district more money. So does Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter. And William Height has a new blueprint for reorganizing and redesigning the district. It's called Action Plan 3.0. To join our conversation, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Keep those emails coming, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. It's interesting that you're sort of decentralizing. The thinking is kind of decentralizing the district, and it looks like giving more, autonomy to these networks that you're setting up across the city?
Yes, and I think it's also putting more resources closer to classrooms and closer to children. And what we're talking about really is there are two things that we want to do. Number one, we want to make sure we have the structural budget fixes. That's the revenue ask. And then we are renewing a focus or having a renewed focus on specialization and expertise. And so we are looking at doing the following things. One is creating a network system, and that network will have the current learning networks, reoriented into neighborhood networks, and that with neighborhood schools, where we would have focused attention on those neighborhoods. Then we have another network around our lowest performing schools, mm-hmm. and those would be our turnaround. And we would be looking for district-run practices or externally run practices that have been evidence-based in lifting those the performance of those schools. Then there's another network that we want to create, and that is called the Opportunity Network. Those are for children who have not been successful in the comprehensive school system. They may have become disconnected or dropped out, and these are children who are generally overage. They need something very different. And then we have an innovation network, and these are looking at schools who are looking and using different design models, and these models could be using competencies versus credits or modules instead of seat time, and really thinking about that network as our research and development arm for the district, so that if there are quality practices that we see out of those, then we can take those to scale. And in addition, having a subset of schools that we want to develop full autonomies for. And so these are a group of high-performing schools that we say, look, we'll get out of your way because we can redirect those mm-hmm. those resources and services to other schools that need that level of support. And so I think those are that's the reorganization and the decentralization. And in addition to that, we want to reorient our shared services so that they're focused precisely on
what
schools.
What are shared services?
Shared services are all of the things that most schools use.
Okay.
And those are things like food service, like transportation. We have now behavior intervention programs, but it could be scheduling, but these are the things that all district schools use, and we want to reorient those so that we are responsive to the schools as opposed to directive to them in terms of – and this could mean that individuals would use a different approach to food service in their school than the current approach.
Hmm.
And so it is becoming a service delivery model that, as I've described it, is best in class. And where we're not best in class, we could then use providers who do that work better than us and then allow them to serve our schools.
And how do you propose engaging parents, maybe engaging more than what has existed today? And, of course, there are parents that are deeply passionate and want a certain school for their children, are frustrated that they can't get their child into that school. What do you do for them?
Yeah, I mean, number one, I think we continue to talk with those individuals and hear the things that they're looking for. It's one of the reasons we opened three new high schools this year. Those three new high schools were in the North Philadelphia area on the east side of Broad Street. But part of that was out of having a series of listening sessions with parents who said they're not quality options for my children, and even the options that are quality don't necessarily meet their levels of interest. And so part of how we're talking about the innovation and the opportunities are really around providing models that are more responsive and personalized to the children's needs. In addition, we are once again encouraging all parents to become a part of their school community, and all current parents and maybe future parents, we want them to become involved. They're friends of groups now. They are SACs, and those are school advisory councils. Those are now at 126 of our schools, and that number is growing. And so those are also ways to become engaged in the types of conversations that we're having about the improvement of educational options.
We have a tweet from I Teach in Philly who says, action plan hints at outsourcing counselors in schools. Dr. Hyde, exactly what is the plan to restore these services?
Yeah, so you have to look at – I've had a couple of emails from some of my colleagues who said those things as well. And it doesn't – so you have to read two documents. And so this is the document that talks about how we prioritize our work and what work is significant and important. There's another document that talks about what we value, and that's our 5-year financial plan. And in that five-year financial plan, I believe on page 10 or 11, it talks about making an investment in counselors and counseling services. And so the point is not to outsource. It's to do just the opposite, because we also recognize that our children have needs. Now, in addition to that, we also know that we need more than the traditional approach to school counseling. We need, in some of our schools, behavioral health. We need, in some of our schools, mental health. We need other types of trauma-informed counseling. And we need college prep types of counseling. And so it is also looking at all of the various groups that could provide services into our schools. And that's why I like the term counseling services, understanding that it has to be an individual there that advocates for children. But in addition to that, there are a set of services that our children need simply because of the effects of poverty that we're not able to provide in all of our schools.
What do you do, though, about underperforming schools that just continually underperform? They just, you know, the children are not learning at the level that they should or need to learn, and it's a continual problem. What do you do about that?
Yeah, I mean, and that's why in our action plan we talked about turnaround. And we talked about turnaround because we have to become urgent around those schools that have historically been underperforming. We have now another process. It's called the System of Great Schools. And in that process, it looks at a lot of factors, like when, how long has the principal been there? How long have the teachers been there? Is the student are the achievements of students growing at a sufficient rate? What's the rate of growth? And then, if all of those things are no's, then that becomes a candidate for turnaround. And that turnaround either is a district model. That is, if you think about it is a reengineering of a promise work, because it's not just about resources, it's about a program. And
like the Promise Academy?
Like the Promise Academy. So
of
it's a reengineered process to do that, but we want to talk about evidence-based practices that yield results. Or looking at a contract provider that has done significant work in the turnaround space that could also do much better work in with certain populations and in certain contexts. And so that's our turnaround work. So this could be an entity that either takes over a school that we contract with to take over a school, or an entity that delivers a certain service in the school, like positive behavior and intervention or restorative practices. And so it is contracting a service or a school provider or turning that school around. But the point to your question is there's a level of urgency for those young people who are sitting in those schools right now that have not seen any improvement or growth over the past decade.
Let me see what looks like Lena from East Kensington has to say. Lena, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just want to just say thank you. Thank you. And thumbs up to if it's removing restrictions so you have more flexibility with the revenue, your revenue, and also regenerating revenue streams. I think those are great, great ideas. I'm a mom, and I have a 7-year-old son who's in the public school here in my neighborhood, and he's in first grade. And one of the things, it's his first year there, and one of the things that I kind of noticed right off was sort of just the level of functioning that the children are at. It's a very, you know, it's a poor neighborhood. It was considerably lower than what my child is. And my child isn't like crazy and smart or something. He's just kind of average. And I was just really, really sort of, that was a wake up call to me that it really seems that early intervention is so important, not just for these children, but for their parents.
Sure.
And I was just wondering what's going on the district level in terms of addressing that.
Lena, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And William Height, there's been a call across the country to invest in pre-education.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. And it was a great setup for a response that allows me to talk about all of our work in early literacy, because the caller is right. I mean, and we have there could be as much as an 18-month gap between children that are coming from middle class and upper incomes versus children who are coming from poverty and lower incomes and when they start school. And so it's an 18-month gap in the development of those children, and it makes our pre-K and early literacy work even more important. And ensuring that those individuals are equipped with the schools – with the tools and the skills and the know-how in order to provide those children with a more high-quality preschool experience than they're currently getting. And what we also know is that when those children start school with some pre-K experience, then the performance of those children then also increases all the way through K-12. And so it's an extremely important investment. We've talked about that investment. But also one other factor is as schools, we also have to differentiate our approach based on where children are. And this it is also thinking about how we distribute revenue and in schools. And we always account for children who are maybe two grades behind and all of the interventions that are associated with that. There's also something to be said for children who are also advanced and providing the needed investments for those young people, because in some cases those children require something very different.
And then, of course, are those kids in the middle, you know, the sort of the average kids. You don't want them to get lost or overlooked.
Right. No, not at all. And I think that when you're engaging children in the things like problem solving and critical thinking and collaboration and having evidence-based discussions after they read a piece of text, then it raises the level of expectation and the experiences of all children, regardless of where they fall on that continuum.
We have a tweet from Aja. He says, how will total equity be reached if there are magnet schools weeding students out as early as fifth grade?
Yeah, I mean, it is. And we have the magnet schools. I mean, and Philadelphia is known for choice. And magnets was Philadelphia version of choice years ago. And to the tweeter's point, you know, this does become, if everyone is after the same group of children. And
these are probably high-performing
children. And they're all high-performing. And people think that they'll have better schools by attracting more high-performing children. Then it becomes much harder to serve everyone else. And so what we're trying to do is really focus our attention from the caller's point. We're trying to focus our attention back into neighborhood schools where the vast majority of our children attend school and really increase the level of education that's happening in those schools and the experiences of those young people and all of our training and development for STEM, early literacy, how we're thinking about technology, coding, and providing children with all of those experiences are now being redirected to focus on what's happening in neighborhood schools.
We're almost out of time here, but as you know, we're in the very beginnings of a mayor's race here in Philadelphia. There will be a new mayor of the city. We don't know who it is yet, but there are different ideas out there in terms of what to do about education in the city. Are you going to keep going ahead with your plan, sort of no matter who the next mayor of Philadelphia is?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think this is a plan for how we think about the future of our district and how we serve the needs of all young people. And it is both a plan about the distribution of resources, but also, more importantly, how we focus on improving instruction, how we get the best people in front of our young people, and how this comes back to the mayor's point, or whoever the next mayor is, how those individuals are going to ensure that there are recurring sources of revenue that allow us to do this work. And I think that's really important, understanding that this is very much the most significant, and I believe now as a citizen and a taxpaying citizen here in Philadelphia, one of the most important investments that we can make in the city.
Well, on that note, my thanks to you for joining us once again on Radio Time to talk about education in the city. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.
And again, our guest has been William Height. He is the superintendent of the Philadelphia School District. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program. You can download a podcast of the show. You can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and also check us out on satellite radio. And why not sign up for our weekly newsletter? Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens, with Quinn Libson. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.